another episode of the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Victoria Male. And we have a super special episode for you today. We have a longtime person we have fangirled over here with us, Dr. Lynn Zubernus.
Hello. Nice to meet you guys. Hello, everyone. You're welcome. You already made me cry, though, by saying Supernatural's 15th and final season. So thanks a lot.
Oh, sorry. We're here for all the feels. We try to take everyone through, you know, the gamut. We wanted to start out the interview by asking you, what do you think has made Supernatural endure for 15 years? Like, that is quite an achievement for a television show. And what do you think the significance is of the fans' role in that longevity?
I think the significance of the fandom is really significant. Having watched it from the beginning and sort of been there for the early days when the show was on the bubble at the end of every season and it was really not sure many, many times that it would go forward. And then this very passionate from the beginning, even though small in numbers, fandom really made themselves heard and really went above and beyond. And, you know, perhaps because it was on one of the smaller networks, that was heard a little bit more. And so it survived, and then it started to pick up momentum, and then it started to get syndicated, and it started to pick up people from all over. So it really has been a phenomenon, and I think there are multiple things that have made it a phenomenon, and some of them are just fortuitous, like really good timing. The show came along sort of right when the internet and online fandom were happening. So it was right there in the very beginning, and it was one of those shows that had all those elements that pulls in a passionate fandom, and suddenly fandom had a platform on which to organize and to be more influential. So, I mean, that's just dumb luck. That's just timing. But obviously, there were a lot of shows that came out at that time, so it's not just that. I think one of the other things is that the message of the show just really struck a chord with people from the beginning. You know, it's sort of unofficial theme is always keep fighting. And God knows, I think a lot of people have needed that message for the past 15 years and maybe now more than ever. So that, you know, Sam and Dean and then later Castiel and other people kind of going up against everything, it as, you know, not superheroes, but humans, but doing that successfully, that resonated. And I think the other two things are, from the beginning, the casting was incredible. Somebody should give the casting agent a fruit basket because every day for the rest of their lives, because, you know, Jared and Jensen had that chemistry that just flew off the screen from the beginning. And then they cast Misha and he had that chemistry that flew off the screen from the beginning. I mean, I don't know how they do it, but they've made very, very few missteps over the course of 15 seasons. And then the last thing, and this is also in some ways almost a coincidence, Creation Entertainment decided to do a Supernatural convention early on and then kind of had the, you know, the wherewithal to, or the savvy to say, oh, wow, there's a lot of passion about this show. And all of the actors, strangely, were great at like stand-up comedy and singing.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. I don't know how. Again, give the casting agent a fruit basket. But that meant the conventions really took off. And the cast and the fans developed this kind of reciprocal symbiotic relationship that had never happened before. Because what cast sees their fans face to face every 2 weeks for a decade? Like, they can't. that cast could not sustain negative stereotypes about fans because they were chatting with them every 2 weeks. So I think it's complicated. It's all four of those things. Well, you were almost halfway in. Right? I mean, that's not so bad.
Pretty much.
You know, I was living in Florida at the time, and my two best friends from high school were like, so are we ready to, like, road trip to Washington, D.C., because that's the closest Supernatural convention to us? Let's do it. So I completely, I mean, I've experienced firsthand that, like, passion from the fans, which I I've been there for sure.
Yeah, you contributed to it.
I love that.
Your fusion of critical analysis with straight up fangirling, that was such an important example for us to have when we were developing our own media.
That's so good to hear. And I know that a lot of people felt that way. I wish I could take you back to our first agent that we had during that time when we tried to say, we want this to be a fusion. And she was just like, no one will buy that book. There's no one who, and I was like, no, fans will love this. Fans are smart, thoughtful people. They're writing meta that is the equivalent of every academic article I've ever read. Like, yes, they will. But publishers, they just scratched their heads. They didn't know what to make of it.
I'm glad it came into being because it was so amazing. So why do you think it was so, when it finally did come out, like what marked it for being really successful in your eyes?
I mean, if you look at money, you wouldn't say it was successful. It definitely was not successful if you're doing that by economics. But that really, we never expected really to make any money off it. So luckily, our expectations were not dashed since we didn't really make any money off of it. But what we really wanted to do was tell the real story. That was the whole goal. We didn't feel like anybody had really told it like it was. And we really wanted to do that. And the first time somebody came up to me at a convention was a mom. And she came up to me and she was crying and she had the book in her hand and she said, I just want to thank you. Now I can talk to my daughter. And I looked behind her and her teenage daughter was there. And I just started to cry because that's why we did it. And the daughter cried and the mom cried. I mean, we all cried. But that is why we wrote it. And that feels good every time somebody says that.
That's really special to know that you've had such a visceral impact on people and being able to share fandom is just... Right. So Kristen and I, we both studied media theory and production at Chapel Hill. And we're both, I don't know if you can tell, huge fangirls. So we're so excited to have you on to ask you how you navigate these two identities of being a quote unquote academic and a quote unquote fangirl. And usually the shame that comes with those two identities or trying to be both. Why do you think it's generally believed that you can't be one and the same?
I think they're just very different identities, you know, and we came into this sort of invested in our serious academic professor and also our kind of mom and partner and family person, like all the sort of accepted traditional things that women are told they can do, right? Mm-hmm. Might be A, might be B, it might be A and B, but those are acceptable. And fangirl is not. And I think it's gotten better, but it's still not. So it's very hard to make a hybrid of those.
Even when you add in within academic the identity of teacher, you know, you're also like face to face with a bunch of students and, you know, typically young adults. And so when it comes to teaching, are you open about your own fandoms to your students? Does that impact the way that you might teach a course?
I am now, I teach all grad students.
Okay.
And I think that makes it easier for me. You know, I teach adults. And so most of them know about the books that I've written. A lot of them are Supernatural fans at this point. A lot of them have read the books. So that's not a problem for me. It was more iffy when I started out on this journey. I was still in clinical practice. So I had clients of all ages. And I think I was less open about it then because, you know, as a therapist, you really don't want your clients to know a lot about you anyway. So now I'm full-time professor, so it's a little easier. But it's still an awkward line to walk sometimes.
I work in entertainment and I work for a franchise. And again, I don't think I've ever said this franchise on the podcast. And it's weird because you have to have boundaries in certain aspects of your life. But then I have found that fangirling has actually been a huge way for me to expand my role at my company and contribute in a specific way and has helped me as someone who works in development and production. But yeah, it's this very, very tricky thing. And I know Kristen too, who also works in an academic environment. It's a tightrope.
Yeah,
it is. It is. And I actually feel very lucky. I should give a shout out to my university because early on, my dean decided that the books that I was writing were absolutely bona fide. And that was part of my tenure track and part of getting me my promotion. And that's unusual. Like my university was very accepting of what I did. They really wanted to understand it as an academic discipline. And I really owe them a big shout out. Yay, Westchester. Yes.
Yay, Westchester.
Well, I mean, that's what I think is so interesting too about like your books and particularly when talking about like, you know, we took media studies, but we didn't necessarily discuss fandom studies, which I think is like a very parallel in some ways, but I think there is like a fine line or there are some differences in how we talk about either just general culture and media versus like how a fandom community intercur relates. I think it's great that it was kind of like accepted in that role in its own sort of like not niche but its own specialized field of study.
Yeah, because I mean I'm a psychologist. I teach in a counseling psychology program. So this was a little afield from what I was doing, although now a lot of my work is around how fandom is good for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, doing panels about how fandom can be so good for your mental health. So they're certainly integrated, but it was a stretch in the beginning. So
for sure. And that's a beautiful transition into the next topic we wanted to discuss with you and question we wanted to ask you. Because in your own research and others in fandom studies, there's this concept of parasocial relationships. And for those who aren't familiar with the term, it's the idea of a one-sided relationship between a fan and a celebrity creating a false intimacy, which I've never done. And you discuss these relationships in Fangasm, how parasocial relationships with television can fulfill a sense of belongingness and not fully be pathological. So traditionally, this has been seen as one-sided, but now it's evolved in the era of social media and conventions, which allow for some two-way communication between a fan and a celebrity or content creator or producer. So even with that expanded concept, we think it's still important to note that there may be limits to this kind of two-way communicative relationship. For instance, a retweet or reply from Misha Collins on Twitter or social media may not mean much more than that. It doesn't mean that you guys are going to like ride off into the sunset together. Can you speak on the evolution of the parasocial relationship in fandom? And what should we keep in mind about these sort of interactions?
I think the whole, you know, parasocial relationships were the first thing I found when I decided I'm going to research this because my experience doesn't really seem to add up. And we found this unbelievably negative, pathologizing research from my own field, yay, psychology. And I was just like, but I don't know anyone who thinks that they're going to marry Jensen Ackles. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this? I just think they kind of got it wrong. I mean, is it a one-sided relationship? Is it an unequal relationship? Of course. But fans don't think that it isn't. Fans are no more delusional than accountants. I'm sure there's one in 10,000 accountants that's delusional too. And there's one in 10,000 fans for sure, but not most fans. And the point is, it's not like you think you're having a friendship with the actor or the singer or whatever. The friendships that come with fandom are with other fans around the shared love of that actor or that character or that property. So their view of, oh, that's so sad, the celebrity doesn't return their affection, they're just sitting alone, isolated, No, that's not it. They're out there having fun with other fans, talking about the thing that they love, or going to a convention and wanting to thank the celebrity for giving them this community. So I just really think they had it very wrong. Are there occasionally people who get delusional? Yes, but that's the tiny, tiny minority.
As the fan who was delusional, and it was, no, honestly, I think it's important to say, Kristen knew me in college. I was totally obsessed with a TV show, totally obsessed with one actor. It was good that I caught myself because I could tell that I was getting into a not healthy space. And it was actually a big reason why I wanted to create this podcast, because with Kristen especially, because it was this weird dichotomy of like, yes, there are unhealthy things I'm doing because of fandom, but also fandom has enriched my life in so many ways that it's like, well, okay, how about I take another brilliant friend of mine who's a fangirl and we explore the most healthy way we can channel fandom in our lives. But it's like, even though you might start in a place where the parasocial relationship could be deemed unhealthy, it doesn't mean that fans can't practice self-awareness and also evolve themselves in these parasocial relationships.
You can call that delusional, but I would kind of argue that, A, considering your developmental stage, the lines between fantasy and reality are a little more blurry. You're in the midst of your identity development. You know, that's part of it. If you told me that you stole $100,000 from your parents and ran off to Europe to try to track him down, or you stalked him at his house or something, I'd say, oh, yeah, okay, you were way over the boundary. But, you were probably at a developmental place where that was part of the progression. And I mean, you had a similar progression like Kathy and I did, because when we fell for Supernatural, we were very alarmed. We were like, what is happening? Yes. How come all I want to do is read Supernatural fan fiction till 4 a.m. and then I have to get up with the kids at 6, and this is probably not sustainable and not a good idea. So there is that initial kind of fall down the rabbit hole. But then most people, the vast majority of people, pick themselves up and then find where their boundaries are. And if you're lucky, like you are and I am, you make something of that and you find really good friendships. And it does help your professional career, too. So, you turn it into something that is not delusional and is definitely positive.
Yeah, positive and productive. Like Lynn just single-handedly like vindicated me from all the shame I've had since I was 18. So yay, podcast.
Well, I am a therapist,
Yes, yes, this is amazing.
This is wonderful. Because what you're saying about kind of being self-aware, I think we've previously discussed the ways the fan can objectively look at social media. And as much as you love it, having to be able to step back and notice flaws. But that I feel like that could also be a little bit different when it comes to participating in a fandom, and in your case, like objectively researching it, which is what you and Kathy came across when writing fandom. I think you're great kind of like writing about your own experiences in regards to that as well. So is there any sort of like personal conflict in drawing from your own experiences for your research? Like, did you learn anything about yourself in regards to you participating in fandom?
Sure. I mean, and it was very hard in the beginning, I think, to take off those rose-colored glasses. When you fall in love with something, you want to keep those rose-colored glasses on all the time. And as soon as we decided to put the fangirl hat on this table and put on the researcher hat, we had to take off those rose-colored glasses. And there was a time early on where I was very afraid that doing that was going to ruin that fangirl hat, and I wasn't ever going to be able to put it back on. And I so valued what I got from wearing that fangirl hat that I didn't want that to happen. And those were hard times in the beginning. And certainly we made a lot of missteps. And Kathy and I kind of, in our friendship, and we're still friends today, in our friendship, we dealt with that in really different ways. So for a while, that was a real difficulty in our friendship too. Because I was much more for putting the fangirl hat back on, and Kathy was much more for we got to stay with the researcher hat. And that was hard. So we kind of worked all those growing pains out by bumping against the two of us. We were very Sam and Dean for a long time.
I love it.
That's amazing. And speaking of Sam and Dean, also thank you for, again, such inspirations for us. Two awesome, brilliant women collaborating on something together and doing it in a healthy awesome, productive way. But back to Sam and Dean. You've been able to interview the stars of Supernatural for your research, and you've had them provide deeply personal essays to Family Don't End With Blood. What is it like as a fan to have been able to build that relationship with the show's beloved stars?
Certainly that was something that you never expect when you fall into fandom. That was sort of the furthest thing from my mind. And honestly, I don't think, as much as I got to know them in writing the first three books, and I did, you know, we spent time, we interviewed them, they contributed to all the books. I certainly saw them at conventions, but it's a different line to cross to say to someone like Misha or Jared or Jensen, hey, will you write a chapter for my book that I'm working on? I never would have done that. It was Jared's idea. It was Jared who said, are you writing another book? And I said, yeah, I'm thinking of writing one where, you know, I have fans write chapters about how much this show has meant to them because it's changed so many lives. And he said, well, you know, I have a story. And yeah. I said, are you telling me you want to write a chapter? And he was like, yeah. And then I asked everybody else and every single person said, yeah, I want to do it. But it was a completely different experience. And I kind of cherish it now because I got to know them in a very different way because I was very touched that they trusted me enough to tell Jared's story is 30 some pages of when he almost gave up on living. Like, he trusted me to tell that story with him, and I'm so honored. But it was amusing too, because it put me in a different position with them. And there was a while there where, as their sort of editor and wrangler, I would see them at a convention and I'd be walking up to say hello or even in an autograph line. And they'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry, Lynn. It's almost done. I can have it in 2 weeks. What is happening? Like, I'm not your professor. I'm your fangirl. This is like too much of a dichotomy for me. I can't straddle this, but we made it work.
It also just speaks to what, and you said how special the actors are in this fandom. Like, the fact, I just know, again, as someone who's worked in Hollywood, and Kristen's worked in Hollywood too, you know, sometimes you meet your heroes and they don't live up to.
Instead, these people just, every single one of them just surpassed. Again, give the casting agent a fruit basket, because they just found these incredible people and they all had some, I mean, the essays that they wrote in Family Don't End With Blood, I would get a draft and just, I would text them back and say, are you sure you want to be this open? And one of them at one point said, well, will it make a difference if I'm not? And I was like, no, dude. Mm. Okay. You know, you've worked in Hollywood and my son acted for a while. I have friends who are in the business. That's not the norm. It is, yeah. The fandom and the cast. And that, again, you know, going back to that parasocial relationship and this idea of one-sidedness and no reciprocity. I mean, a book like Family Don't End With Blood just takes that supposition and just shatters it in a billion pieces, because we did this together for the same reason. That was sort of the most important part. Like, I wanted it to be both fans and actors, because if you're going to be inspired by anyone, it's probably going to be either the person that you fan or somebody who's in your position. Yeah. So some people tell me it's the actors' chapters that have, like, and people have, I mean, the most rewarding thing that's happened is the number of people who have told me, you know, I had the razor blade in my hand and the book was on my shelf and I picked up the book instead. Like,
wow.
What? That is, but sometimes it's the actor's chapters and sometimes it's a fan's chapter. you know, or sometimes it's a combination. So yeah. it really was sort of an equal kind of thing. And I don't think we see fandom and celebrity. Yeah, I'm doing air quotes now. You can't see me, but celebrity. I don't think we see them that way, as working together in that way. I was having so much fun until now, and now I'm just not having fun anymore. No, I'm kidding. I think it will absolutely go on, but I'm also one of those realist people who realizes that it will be really different. You know, this is an extremely active fandom. Things are happening every day. Content is happening every day. There are social media posts. There are episodes to review. There are speculation. That's what conventions are about right now, and that's what online fandom is about right now. And that's not going to be there. So it's definitely going to be different. And I think that is a loss, you know, the immediacy of that and just the ability to immerse yourself in Supernatural and have so much content around you. That's a loss. It's going to be a loss. So will it go on? Yes, absolutely. But will it be really different and will it be really hard? I think it will. I really do think it will. I think fans have to sort of get prepared for that, because it's going to be a loss, and loss is hard for humans.
It is. And it's why we're so glad that we were able to have you on the podcast at the beginning of the 15th season rather than the end.
Maybe I should come back at the end.
Oh my God, we would love to have you back. Like, we're not saying, like, please come back. We love you.
We're putting you on the calendar now.
I think it is good to almost like have that time and the self-awareness to kind of emotionally prepare for that loss. Because again, it's been a show that has been in some people's lives for a decade and a half.
The time and just the bigness of it, you know, how it's just been all encompassing for so many people, that's going to be a big loss.
But to make things a little more fun, to end on a higher, more lighter note, it's time to play our fandom Would You Rather game.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. And so Lynn handpicked her questions. So we're thrilled to hear what the answers are. So our first hand-selected Would You Rather is, would you rather watch your ship be realized in canon, but read no fan fiction about them ever again, or read unlimited fan fiction about them, but never see them together in canon?
This was the easiest one. That's why I picked it, because I could never go without reading fan fiction ever again. That would be like some horrible, horrible curse. And also, I came into fandom at the time when fan fiction was outside of canon. And in some ways, I like that better. Like the thing that I found so powerful and transformative about fan fiction was that it was outside the bounds of reality. So it could be transgressive and it could be something you'd never want to ship in real life. And it could explore taboos. And I mean, it could be anything you wanted it to be. And nobody in a million years thought about whether it would be canon, because frankly, a lot of the ships, either they were RPF ships, which there is no canon, these are real people, but you're not really writing about the real people, or it was something that you wouldn't even want to have happen on canon or couldn't possibly happen on canon. So that was like super easy. It's a much more recent thing to really feel an investment in seeing your ship become canon. And while I understand that temptation, because when you have a ship, you just passionately want more content around that ship. But I've never thought about needing it on the screen. I've wanted to kind of keep it safe outside of canon so that it's fandom who is in charge of how that is.
Would you rather your favorite show be canceled at its peak or have it drive on for too many seasons?
This is going to be a controversial answer, because I feel like, as somebody who does weekly reviews for Supernatural and, you know, does criticism and is an academic, I should totally say the former, but I would just be lying. I didn't want Supernatural to end. I don't want it ever to end. I just don't want the world to go away. And while I certainly am critical of episodes that I don't like, and there have been seasons that I didn't like, and most of my favorite seasons are the early seasons, I still will take the pleasure from every episode and every moment that I get with my favorite characters. So it's totally the latter. I'm sorry.
Do not be sorry. This is my life. The fifth season of Supernatural is probably the best. But if there was overall is not my favorite, but if that hadn't existed, I wouldn't have seen The French Mistake, which is the episode that got me into Supernatural anyway, which is a fantastic episode.
Yeah, I mean, how could, think about it, you know, The French Mistake and Baby and Scooby Natural, yes. And maybe all, you know, the season as a whole wasn't like powerful, but there are always things in there that I can love and that nourish me as a fan, and I don't ever want to give that up.
Kind of going back to canons and OTPs, within the context of the show, within the context of canon, would you rather see your OTP break up or see your no TP get together?
Oh, so, what a terrible, terrible, horrible choice. I guess a no TP get together, because as long, like I said, as long as I have the things I want, I can side eye the things that I don't and just hand wave as much as I can and just look the other way for a little while. I mean, there have been storylines and characters on Supernatural that I really didn't like, but they didn't necessarily ruin the episode for me because maybe there was something else happening that like I loved. So terrible question though. Terrible. No, because this would go for any. This would go okay. for any across the board, certainly on this show. It's so easy. I would just like, I never wanted to be anything but friends with all of them. I mean, perhaps because I got into fandom when I wasn't a teenager. So I was a little past the stage of let's fantasize about happily ever, you know, let's face it. I've really never in a million years thought about riding off into the sunset with Jared, Jensen, Misha, Alex, Samantha, anyone. So I just wanted to know them. And now that I do know them, that's been extremely satisfying. So that was super easy. I picked all the easy ones.
But you have such great answers and reasonings why, so it's totally chill. So for the last would you rather see a musical episode with your favorite show or a crossover with your two favorite shows?
Also easy, 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 because I so, so, so want a musical episode of Supernatural, like a real musical episode of Supernatural. Come on, universe.
Do you hear us, CW? Do you hear us?
It would be just so amazing. First of all, I mean, remember when I said the casting agent cast everybody who can frickin' sing? Like, these people could, like, kill a musical, and they're all theatrical, and they all love doing this kind of, I mean, they would have so much fun, and we would be able to watch it forever. And the other thing is, I'm not fanish about very many other things, honestly, so the only other show, I watch The Magicians, I watch The Boys, I'm watching starting Doom Patrol, but The Magicians is the only other show I'm kind of fanish about. But I don't really have any great desire for the worlds to cross. I like them both for what they are. But oh God, please give me that musical episode. And can Robbie Thompson please come back to write it? Please, universe, while I'm putting it out there.
No, because I mean, that musical episode was good. It was fun. But it was also like, you can easily write it off with someone just like causing a musical to happen. Like they did the Scooby-Doo crossover. Like they can make a proper musical episode happen. So, universe, make it happen.
It has been talked about, so we'll see.
This has been a dream come true for us, and just a wonderful further education on our fandom, and just, I think, the best way for our podcast to kick off the 15th season of Supernatural. Where can everyone find you on social media and support all the amazing work you do?
They can find me on Twitter at FangasmSPN. That's the one I'm most active on. I'm also on Facebook and Tumblr and Instagram, always under that name. And I have a website, fangasmthebook.com, where there's always episode reviews and you can, and various other things, interviews and updates. But now that season 15 is starting, there'll be serious, serious episode reviews up there. And you can find all my books, including Family Don't End With Blood and Fangasm Supernatural Fangirls, on Amazon.
And we'll be looking forward to all of your episode insights. And for everyone listening, we'll have links to everywhere that you can find Lynn and all of that on our website, yourbiggestfangirls.com. And of course, we're already following her on our social media channels, YBFG Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and Your Biggest Fangirl on Tumblr.
And fangirls, if you enjoyed this episode with Lynn, which I'm sure you did, and want her to come back for the finale, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on your podcatcher of choice.
I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we did it. It was really fun. So nice to meet you both.
And fangirls, I hope you were all sufficiently pumped for the season premiere of the 15th season of Supernatural, and we will see you in a couple weeks with another episode.
Our theme song is California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.